May it please the court. My name is Jim Filio. I represent Mr. Brandt, the appellant in this case. This case is a challenge to the constitutionality of an ordinance passed by the village of Winnetka, which we believe imposes an unconstitutional burden based on the content of speech on the citizen of Winnetka. And the case is here because the district court granted summary judgment against my client, finding that the case was not ripe.
Certainly didn't grant summary judgment.
This
was dismissed. And actually, my main question to you is, are we sure what the district judge did? And you said here, and you say in your brief, the district judge found the controversy not ripe.
Correct.
There's a lot of ripeness language in the district court's opinion.
Correct.
There's also a statement in the district court's opinion that the plaintiff lacked standing.
Yes.
The reason I bring this up is because ripeness is not an Article III problem, and standing is. And if we understand the district court as dismissing this for lack of ripeness, then appellate review is for abuse of discretion, because ripeness is a concept under the Declaratory Judgment Statute. And we held quite recently, actually, that all decisions denying declaratory relief are reviewed deferentially. But if the district judge dismissed for want of standing, our review is plenary. So my question is, which of these is it? What are we really looking at here?
Your Honor, I'm not sure what the district court did. I have some
sympathy with you, because the district court uses both kinds of language.
Exactly, Your Honor. And I believe we satisfy the requirements of both. And I do understand there's a different standard of review on ripeness. Standing is, it's a related concept in my way, of thinking, to the hardship requirement of ripeness and to justiciability under a standing argument. So from our point of view, because this ordinance imposes a burden on the exercise of such a fundamental and important right, the right to host a political fundraiser or a political event for presidential level politics. I mean, that goes to the core of our First Amendment rights. This case is real. It has, it's fit for judicial decision. The harm is real, actual, it's present, it's continuing. The enforcement of the ordinance is virtually certain, given the facts. The cases, discoveries occurred. The facts, the essential facts, are not in dispute. Both sides have suggested, if the court gets...
Well, let me put this, what's fundamentally the same question, in a different way. I understand you to be making an as-applied challenge rather than argue that this ordinance is unconstitutional on its face.
Yes, Your Honor.
How can one raise an as-applied challenge unless there's an actual application? The question, in other words, is there any such thing as an anticipatory as-applied challenge?
I wouldn't call it
This is an anticipatory challenge, because the ordinance has not been, you're not contesting a particular application of this ordinance to your client to force your client to pay money he doesn't want to pay. So this is an anticipatory as-applied challenge, and indeed you cite Abbott Laboratories against Garner as allowing anticipatory challenges. So my question is there any such critter as an anticipatory as-applied challenge?
Yes, Your Honor, I believe there is. This court in the McDonald case, which was actually decided against the person challenging the ordinance, looked at the as-applied challenge. And while the majority in that case ruled against the challenge, it analyzed it based on whether there was sufficient carefully regulated and defined limited ways of controlling the speech. And in that way, they focused on the traffic as content neutral and not content based. But, Your Honor, just on the anticipatory nature, I also think there is a real present harm here. And that's the chilling effect that it has, and in effect, the way it even prevents this from even happening. And I
what concrete, I always hate language like chilling effect, especially in Chicago where the chill is common. What event has, specific event, has your client declined to host because of this statute? Right? I could imagine your client saying, I really wanted to invite, and then hear a name, right, and this person was willing to come, and I then told that person about the ordinance, and they said, we won't reimburse you for that. And then I said, I'm not willing to pay myself. And so we didn't host the event. That would be real evidence of an application or a chill. Is there any such evidence in the record?
No, not specifically, Your Honor. There is evidence that he planned an event with Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, but she
canceled for a different reason. For a different
reason. The Democratic Party didn't nominate her.
And directly, Your Honor, no, there is not. But
then
why
how
do we
does
have
one,
to wait
you know,
for that?
We're back to my question. How can one have an anticipatory as-applied challenge if there were some concrete event saying I wanted real candidate X to come, and I that real candidate's real political organization wouldn't pay the Winnetka bill, and I was unwilling to underwrite it? That's real. And then one could think of an as-applied challenge. But otherwise, we're just in the realm of speculation.
Your Honor, I don't think we are in the realm of speculation, and the reason is because the very scenario you just described will happen. And the record is clear that my client
will do that. Counsel, so you predict. But first, for an as-applied challenge, it actually has to happen. And I, for my part, am not that confident about the prediction. I thought the record shows that this ordinance has been applied 3 times, and that each time the political organization, rather than the householder, paid the bill.
Yes, Your Honor. But the ordinance is directed at the host, at the individual.
No, look, counsel, just listen to my question before you try to answer it. What then makes you confident that in a future case where your client invites, say, President Obama to have a fundraiser, the Democratic National Committee will refuse to foot the bill and leave the bill on your client?
Because whether they do or they don't, my client is the one who's subjected to the ordinance, not the political campaign.
Counsel, just think through the basics of a chilling argument.
Yes.
The way your client would be chilled is to have the village demand money from him for holding a political fundraiser. If he doesn't have to pay the village a penny because the Democratic National Committee will pick up the tab, he's not chilled. The person being chilled is the Democratic National Committee, who isn't a plaintiff here. So we come back to my question. What makes you confident that in the future the National Political Committee or the Candidates Committee will refuse to pay the tab and expose your client to this chilling effect? That's the core question here.
Okay. And, Your Honor, if I could just move just a little on that, because there's another reason why this, the answer, and it relates to your question. The likelihood of my client being able to host a political event like inviting President Obama to his home, this will, because of this ordinance, it will not happen. And you can objectively look at that. The political
President
campaign can go, they can do fundraisers places.
Counsel, look. President Bush came.
Right.
First Lady came twice after this ordinance. I could see that you'd be getting someplace if you sent this letter, you know, inviting President Obama and his political committee or the Democratic committee said, we're unwilling to pay the bill in Winnetka. So either A, we're not coming, or B, we demand that Brandt pay the bill. But until that happens, I don't see how we have anything concrete. You're predicting that will happen, but whether it will happen seems to me quite up in the air, given that we know that the Republican National Committee paid the bill three times to hold fundraisers in Winnetka.
Your Honor, we don't, well, to respond directly to your question, I don't think we have to wait. If this is going to happen, why do we need to wait? It's not the temporal proximity to the harm. It's the probability or certainty that the harm will occur. My client presently is inhibited from hosting and planning to host a presidential level political fundraiser because of this ordinance. The ordinance is directed at him, not at the political party. The likelihood, objectively, of a political party even considering a presidential event, fundraiser event at his home because of this ordinance, once they know that this ordinance exists, is unlikely.
I guess the trouble I've got with it is that we don't know how it's going to be applied until that event is scheduled, until you have something concrete. Otherwise, perhaps the village here is just going to impose the costs of the event itself, not, say, the spectators along the roadway or something of that nature that you can't control. So unless we've got a real live situation here,
they
see this as an applied challenge.
The village says it will, Your Honor. In the record, the chief of police says exactly what they do and what they collaborate with the Secret Service. And that is the amount of that is unknown. We know it's going to be a large amount, but they gauge how much they're going to charge and what they're going to do based on the controversy or the identity of the speaker, the political figure. But they will do it. They say they will do it. That is part of the record. That is undisputed. We know they will do it.
Counsel, you're under your rebuttal time first.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'll sit down for now.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Murphy.
May it please the Court, responding to Your Honor's question about the, I guess, kind of the dual nature of the district court's opinion. The district
there may be three possibilities. No standing, not ripe, or I'm just exercising my discretion under Brillhart not to issue a declaratory judgment. Things in the district court's opinion sound like all three of those.
Our read of it, of course, is because the district court cited a number of the same what-if examples that Your Honors have just mentioned and that we've mentioned in the brief, it appears that, you know, the primary thrust of the district court's opinion on this narrowed as-applied challenge is really the ripeness. We've got too many unknowns. We don't know what will happen in the future. We don't know if Mr. Brandt will ever host a presidential event.
Yeah, as I say, a lot of what the district court said sounds like that, but the bottom line in the district court's opinion is dismissed for lack of standing, and ripeness is different from standing. The Supreme Court has said repeatedly that ripeness is not an Article III problem.
And the district court also granted summary judgment, so it creates
that's inconceivable. You can't possibly dismiss for lack of jurisdiction, which is what the district court said it was doing, and grant summary judgment. Dismissing for lack of jurisdiction is done under Rule 12A1. It has nothing to do with Rule 56. It's just very hard to understand what is actually before us for review. So you're as puzzled as your adversary and as the members of the court are, I take it.
I think as Your Honor saw from the writings of both sides, and certainly from our side, we view this as primarily a ripeness issue because of all of the variables that would be required to entertain a case and put some real meat on the bones here. I'd like to just talk about a couple of points in terms of plaintiff's contention that a presidential visit will not happen as a result of this ordinance. First, there's nothing in the record on that. As Your Honor points out, there's no crossing of the swords.
There's something in the record on that, which is that since this ordinance was adopted, there has been a presidential visit. President Bush.
That is correct. Certainly that was not at the Brandt House.
Not at the Brandt House, but there have been. President Bush came, and First Lady Laura Bush came twice. The ordinance was applied to them, and I gather in each case the Republican National Committee or some other political committee paid the bill.
The RNC paid the bill.
Right. So this lawsuit rests on the prediction that the Democratic National Committee will be stingier than the Republican National Committee.
That's a reasonable position.
Well, we certainly know from the national standpoint that they weren't stingy following the presidential election and the Grant Park event.
Yes, they certainly paid Chicago a pretty penny for that one.
I don't know whether that relates to the relative moral suasion by the chief executive of Winnetka versus the city of Chicago, but the only evidence that you...
It also reflects the fact that the ins are better able to raise money than the outs.
And if Mr. Brandt is going to be hosting a presidential event during this next cycle, it will be with an inn who is certainly capable of reimbursing the community. The other point I'd like to talk in response to Your Honor's question is the chilling effect. In addition to there being nothing in the record, the problem expressed by Mr. Brandt really had nothing to do with free speech per se. He was concerned that if the cost of the event were to be applied to him, that would go against his ability to make political contributions under the Federal Election Commission regulations. There was never any citation of any authority by anybody, but that was the concern that he expressed, that if the fundraising or the security overhead were charged against him, you know, just like the tables and the tent and everything else, that would somehow be a debit against his account on FEC matters. Well, that certainly is not a First Amendment concern. If one regulation creates another regulatory problem, but there's...
It might be a First Amendment concern, but again, it raises a ripeness question. That would be a question, I assume, in the first instance for the Federal Election Commission. Has the FEC given an opinion on a question like that?
Certainly not in the record like in our case,
well,
and none was furnished.
The record in this case, what the opinions of the FEC are public documents. Has anybody looked to see what the FEC has said?
We did back when this was a facial challenge, and we found nothing. Now, that was in 2007. But at least at this point, in terms of the Brandt situation, it's not the type of chilling effect that we've seen in other cases. If the court proceeds to the merits, this is not a content-based regulation. It's simply an attempt by a municipality to deal with extraordinary costs. You know, again, dealing with the 2004 presidential event, that's really the only thing we have to go on, because there's no record in terms of the depth of obligation imposed on the municipality. But, you know, Winnetka may have a reputation as a wealthy town, but that doesn't necessarily convert to a wealthy municipal government. And an event like this saps the strength of the municipal police department. All hands on deck, and we had to elicit the aid of the joint. We have a joint mutual aid with all the other police departments. So it takes an extraordinary effort to do this. And a municipality, in our view, has the right, when it's a private event, regardless of whether it's a political fundraiser or somebody having a rock concert on their private beach in Lake Michigan, for the village to recover these expenses. It makes no difference to the village whether it's President Bush, President Obama. It's the cost of providing a service which goes to the benefit of only one person. It has nothing to do with what Obama's views are or Bush's view. Indeed, in the Ryan Bush case, it was just strictly a motorcade going through town, so it wasn't a situation where there were an adoring crowd or heckler's veto situation. It was just safe passage down Waukegan Road to the ultimately to Sheridan Road, and then having snipers and the like posted around the perimeter of the Ryan House. So really, really has nothing to do with content. In terms of the, I want to back up a little bit on the chilling effect. The district court did note that when we took Mr. Brandt's deposition the second time, that he said he was planning to have Hillary Clinton come to his house for a fundraiser if she won the nomination. Now, there's no indication it would have been a golden opportunity for him to say, you know, I was thinking about having Senator Clinton come to the house, but not with this ordinance in place. I'm just not going to take the chance. It was exactly the opposite. He was planning to do that, ready to go full speed ahead if Senator Clinton had obtained the nomination. Our final point is this issue of, I guess, the conceptual difference between plaintiff's view of the case, which is a content-based regulation implicating somebody's use of a public forum, or our view, whether it's the USERSA-Regan, and that was an issue that was initially raised by Judge Pallmeyer when she had this case, that a municipality or a government does not have the obligation to subsidize a person's exercise of First Amendment rights when the costs are not imposed by the government itself. All the village is seeking to do in this case is really a content-neutral recovery of its costs. We don't know what's going to happen the next time. We don't know if Mr. Brandt has a fundraiser, whether the president will be helicoptered in like Clinton the first time, or whether there'll be a big motorcade, or whether there'll be in connection with other events. We just don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what the costs are going to be. We don't know if somebody else is going to pick it up. We don't know, for example, if there might be a coincidence where the village police department is absorbed in another case. You know, they're very busy now with that tragedy at New Trier. We don't know if two things could happen at the same time where the village could say, we don't have the people for this event, and you're going to have to talk to the state police, or you're going to have to talk to somebody else. So all of these imponderables, I think, justify the district court, regardless of which doctrine the court was focusing on, in determining that there are too many ifs, and now is not the time to have an as-applied challenge. I mean, a perfect opportunity is either Your Honor's hypothetical, or the event goes ahead and Mr. Brandt refuses to pay the bill. One thing that we don't know is whether if Brandt says I'm not going to pay, the DNC is not going to pay, the village could say, well, we're not going to provide the manpower. We can't afford it. So I think having a lot more flesh on the bones of this controversy, if and when it ever arises again, would be appropriate. And, you know, it's obviously an important case for the plaintiffs when they filed it, because a lot of the complaint dealt with other municipalities throughout the country that were considering adopting laws like this, passing on the costs of these private political events. So it's obvious there's a target they're trying to hit, but in terms of the court's exercising an authority, it would, in our view, the district court was correct saying there has to be much more of a record, much more of a specific application to a concrete set of facts to enable a court, a district court, and ultimately a reviewing court to make that kind of determination. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Anything further?
Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to make 2 points to respond to some of your questions in the opening argument. There is the Seventh Circuit case that does look at an as-applied challenge in what you might refer to as an anticipatory situation. It's the Commodity Trend Service case versus CFTC, and it states that CTS has alleged sufficient hardship to ripen its as-applied challenge into a justiciable case or controversy. Continues a little later. CTS presents a cognizable harm by pleading that it wishes to engage in proscribed expression, but is deterred from doing so by the CFTC's interpretation of the Commodities Exchange Act. And this kind of self-censorship is a substantial hardship within the meaning of Abbott Labs. The other point I'd like to make with respect to whether the Democratic National Committee or some other person would pay the bill. This ordinance is directed at the individual who hosts the event. I do not think it is unripe merely because there's the possibility that somebody else is going to step in and pay the bill. That, I don't think, passes constitutional muster. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case is taken under advisement.